Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it.
Hello and welcome to this Holy Half Hour programme here on 3TFM, your local radio station, with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcote's North Parish Church. I also have in the studio with me tonight Mrs. Betty Hutton, who's going to be doing some readings. So welcome, Betty. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And what we're going to do is look at the New Testament parables. We'll have two programmes, one on New Testament parables and one on Old Testament parables. But tonight, let's think about the New Testament. Jesus often told parables or stories. Often they were fictional stories, but they made a very true and profound point. His stories were often in the context of conflict or in the heat of debate or just spontaneous in conversation. And he would illustrate what he was trying to say. Although, while he was trying to illustrate, it was amazing how often people asked him, "What did you mean by that one?" And people have discussed and chewed over his parables for 2,000 years now. But basically, they are simple stories that make one clear point that's intended to clarify what's being said. They try and give you concrete pictures. They try and make us think for ourselves, although we have to think it through and come to the conclusion Jesus had in mind originally. He always adapted his parables to the audience. Jesus didn't tend to make pre-prepared speeches in grand arenas. He tended to be just drifting along with his disciples and a crowd would gather and then they would speak kind of spontaneously. All his parables are spoken. Jesus didn't write anything. The idea of a parable is to seal the point and to maybe get you to go away having thought about it and maybe change your behaviour. They were life-changing. They are life-changing. So, without further ado, let's have a look at some of these gems. And let's begin with the pearl of great price from Matthew's Gospel. So over to you, Betty.
Also, the kingdom of heaven is like this. A man is looking for fine pearls, and when he finds one that is unusually fine, he goes and sells everything he has and buys that pearl.
And here's a song by a local man from Saltcote, Roger Patterson, singing about the pearl of great price.
The light of the world, take the place of the richest man I know. I'm richer now than gold could ever make me. For in him I found the fortune, the pearl of great price, in a place where only Jesus' love could take me. All this world offers are just diamonds made of dust. They glitter for a while and then they're gone. But the Father says his kingdom is like a precious pearl, priceless, yet in Jesus it is free to anyone.
That's one of the pearls, the gems that Jesus gave us. Here's another one. Jesus told us the story about the good shepherd and his lost sheep in Luke chapter 15.
One day, when many tax collectors and other outcasts came to listen to Jesus, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law started grumbling, "This man welcomes outcasts and even eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. What does he do? He leaves the other 99 sheep in the pasture and goes looking for the one that got lost until he finds it. When he finds it, he's so happy that he puts it on his shoulders and carries it back home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says to them, "I'm so happy. I've found my lost sheep. Let us celebrate." In the same way, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 respectable people who do not need to repent.
There were 99 that safely lay in the shelter of the fold, but one was out on the hills away, far off from the gates of gold, away on the mountains wild and bare, away from the tender shepherd's care, away from the tender shepherd's care. Lord, thou hast here thine 99. Are they not enough for thee? But the shepherd made answer, "This of mine has wandered away from me. And although the road be rough and steep, I go to the desert to find my sheep. I go to the desert to find my sheep." And all through the mountains thunder riven, and up from the rocky steep, there arose a glad cry to the gates of heaven, "Rejoice, I have found my sheep." And the angels echoed around the throne, "Rejoice, for the Lord brings back his own. Rejoice, rejoice, for the Lord brings back his own."
That was George Beverly Shea singing the 99, the story about the lost sheep. That's one of Jesus' more comforting sort of images. He's the good shepherd, we're the lost sheep, and he comes to find us. But sometimes his parables had a sharp twist to them. They were telling people a spade is a spade, as in this one, the one about the bigger barns from Luke chapter 12. But just for variety, Betty's going to read this in Tom White's version.
This story's about a wee man in a hoose, and the guy was a bit of a dope, for he steered it okay in a business-like way, and then just didn't ken when to stop. I suppose you could say that he just tried his best, if you wanted to mount a defence. But it has to be said, he was just a big Ned, with a great deal more money than sense. For the basic design was a modest affair, nice wee day's rest, so it was. 12 bedrooms and that, all the rooms on the flat, and all in all simply the biz. Well, it took a few years to complete all the work, and his marriage was showing the strain. Never more, said his wife, for the rest of my life could I face that palaver again. Well, I thought, he replied when he felt it was safe, even though it's quite nice here inside, it would be fine to complete the design as a lean-to out there on the side. So he built a conservatory onto the hoose. Another 3 months that one took. Got the plants settled in, poured a very large gin, then stood back to have a good look. It's a wee bit lopsided, he thought to himself, as he puffed on his cigar. So despite his wife's barrage, he built on a garage, went out and bought a new car. Surely now, said his wife, we can both just relax and rest after all that exertion. But she very near died when her husband replied that he fancied a wee loft conversion. Well, the room in the loft took the rest of the year, for the effort required was amazing, and though that was misguided, our man still decided on new PVC double glazing. That's enough, said his wife. I just want you to stop and enjoy all the space in the headroom. Though she threatened divorce, he still stared it, of course, and a long suite for the principal bedroom. It got to the point where he just couldn't rest without having a panic attack. So to keep himself sane, he prepared the terrain for a laundry room out at the back. Then he added some decking behind the lean-to for to view all the flora and fauna. And then, on a whim, built a personal gym kitted out with a steam room and sauna. Then a patio next with discreet outside lights and a fish pond round which to meander. And then the great sap just went right over the tap. We are gone with a wind-type veranda. But at last it was done, and he said to his wife, that's everything new that I need. Then he went up the stair and collapsed on the flare, and a few seconds later was dead. Now, you think it cruel for to get a few laughs about how some wee idiot burnt out? 'Cause quite a few folk didn't think it a joke, when that's how their life really turned out. But Jesus once said, that's the way it'll be for many a husband and wife, 'cause they get so uptight that they simply lose sight of what really matters in life. They spend so much time building up great reserves and constantly striving for more. Then they learn much too late that the finger of fate can poke any time, anywhere. For nane of us kens what the future might hold or how lang we're likely to stay, and in heaven we'll be known no how much we own, but how much we live day after day. So here is my message to each man and wife and to every senor and senora. Live for now, no for when. Don't put off until then. Live each day like you'll no see the morrow.
And that's how Jesus would have sounded if he had been a Scottish rapper. If Jesus had been an American black singer, he would sound like this.
Life I've always eyes are wanted. I guess I'll never have. I'll be working for somebody else until I'm in my grave. I'll be dreaming of a life of ease and mountains, oh, mountains of thanks. Have a big expensive car, drag my furs on the ground. Have a maid I can tell to bring me anything. Everyone will look at me with envy and with greed. Now revel in their attention and mountains, oh mountains of thanks. Sweet lazy life, champagne and caviar. Hope you come and find me, 'cause you know who we are. Those who deserve the best in life know what a money's worth. Those whose sole misfortune is having mountains on nothing at birth. Oh, they tell me it's still time to save my soul. They tell me renounce, counts all those material things you get. I'll make you queen. Won't die lonely, have it all prearranged. Grave that's deep and wide enough for me and all my mountains.
That's Tracy Chapman singing about the futility of trying to get happiness by mountains of things. Now here's a story Jesus told about a young man who had to learn the lesson the hard way by leaving home first. The Prodigal Son, from Luke chapter 15. Betty's reading it this time from the Jamie Stewart's Glasgow Bible version.
Jesus told a story about a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Hey, father, can I ask you a favour? Why no give me a share of the family gear right now to save me waiting till you're dead?" The father was hurt, but agreed and split his property between the two sons. A wee while after, the younger son picked up all his gear and left home for the bright lights in the big city. Wasn't lang afore he wasted his whole fortune on the bevy and the parties and living it up. Just when he was hitting rock bottom, a terrible famine swept over the country. He needed work right bad, but all he could do was a job with a farmer, feeding the pigs. He was so famished that he could have eaten the beans the pigs were scoffing. Nobody took pity on him. Finally, he gets wise and he says to himself, "Och, I'm aff my heed, so I am. At home, even my father's servants are well looked after, and here's me starving. I'll just need to bottle my pride and go home. I'll confess to my father that I've done wrang and ask him to sign me up along with the servants." So he gets up and starts out for him. He's still a lang way fae his house when his father catches sight of him and runs out to meet him. He throws his arms around him and kisses him. The boy was greeting, "I'm sorry, father. Honest, I'm just a loser and no fit to be called your son." But his father shouted to the servants, "Fetch out some nice clean clothes and for my boy, and I put a ring on his finger and I want to kill the prize calf. We're going to have ourselves a real celebration this night." Now, the big brother was coming in for the fields. When he came near the house, he heard the music and the jigging. He called to one of the servants and asked what was up. "Your wee brother's come back home, sir," he was told. "Aye, and we're celebrating like. Your father has even killed the prize coo for the feast." The big brother was bailing and wouldn't again to the house, so the father comes out to reason with him. He answers his father, "Now, hold on and listen to me. I've slaved for you all the years and you didn't even once give me a party. And now that wee niaf comes back, been on the run, Dan. So he has spent all your money and booze and whores, and you kill your best coo for him? My son, he says to him, you've aye been here with me. You must ken that all that's mine is yours. But you see, it was right to celebrate. I thought my son was dead, and he's come back to life. He was lost, and now he's come home.
Loved you long before the time your eyes first saw the day, and everything I've done has been to help you on the way. But you took all that you wanted, then at last you took your leave, and traded off a kingdom for the lies that you've believed. And although you've chosen darkness with its miseries and fears, although you've gone so far from me and wasted all these years, even though my name's been spattered by the mire in which you lie, I take you back this instant if you turn to me and cry. I don't care where you've been sleeping, I don't care who's made your bed, I already gave my life to set you free. There's no sin you could imagine that is stronger than my love. It's all yours if you'll come home again. You've come back to your senses, and you see who's been to blame. Remember all the good things that were yours with just my name, and then don't waste another thought before you change the way you're bound. I'll be running out to meet you if you'll only turn around. Just turn around. I don't care where you've been sleeping, I don't care who's made your bed, I already gave my life to set you free. There's no sin you could imagine that is stronger than my love. It's all yours if you come home again. I don't care where you've been sleeping, I don't care who's made your bed, I already gave my life to set you free. There's no sin you could imagine that is stronger than my love. It's all yours if you'll come home again.
That was Jesus' most famous parable, probably, the prodigal son. If there's any other parable rivaling it as the most famous one, I think it would be the Good Samaritan. So here's Betty to read the Good Samaritan from the Good News version, and it's followed by Patricia Noble singing the Good Samaritan.
Jesus answered, "There was once a man who was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when robbers attacked him, stripped him, and beat him up, leaving him half dead. It so happened that a priest was going down that road, but when he saw the man, he walked on by on the other side. In the same way, a Levite also came along, went over and looked at the man, and then walked on by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was travelling that way came upon the man, and when he saw him, his heart was filled with pity. He went over to him, poured oil and wine on his wounds and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own animal and took him to an inn, where he took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. "Take care of him," he told the innkeeper, "and when I come back this way, I will pay you whatever else you spend on him." And Jesus concluded, "In your opinion, which one of these 3 acted like a neighbour towards the man attacked by the robbers?" The teacher of the law answered, "The one who was kind to him." Jesus replied, "You go then and do the same."
He was travelling along the windy road that leads from Jericho, hoping to reach Jerusalem by the end of day. Well, the sun beat down, he was getting tired, and the journey seemed so long. He hoped he'd find a place to stop along the way. Then the night drew in and the temperature fell, and the way got very dark. Still he traveled on, thoughts of home were on his mind. But unknown to him, a gang of thieves were lying there in wait. They beat him up, stole all he had, and left him there to die. At the crack of dawn, 2 holy priests were walking on that road. To the synagogue they went to worship on that day. They came across the man who was beaten up, but to help him would waste their time. They'd be late for church, and so they passed on by. Then a Samaritan arrived, an untouchable, a type who no one loved. He saw the man in the gutter and knelt down by his side. He tended his wounds, gave him some food, and brought him to an inn. Paid for his board, promised to return, and went on his way. Now God looks down from heaven above to see if love is just a word we use or something that we live. We must walk the walk, not just talk the talk, if we want to follow Christ, loving God, others, and learning to forgive.
Well, our holy half hour is nearly up, but suffice it to say that when Jesus told his little parables, they weren't just meant to be nice stories for entertainment. They were meant to pose 2 basic questions. We're left asking, what is Jesus trying to tell me here? And what am I going to do about it now? At the end of all his teaching and all his parables, people were amazed at his authority, and he has changed people's lives for 2,000 years. Our last parable, which Betty is about to read, and thank you very much, Betty, for coming and doing the reading today.
You're welcome.
Is the one about the wise man and the foolish man, making the point that if we're wise, we'll build our life on Jesus' teaching. So this is Matthew 7, read by Betty, followed by Don Francisco singing How Firm a Foundation. Bye for now.
So then, anyone who hears these words of mine and obeys them is like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain poured down, the rivers overflowed, and the wind blew hard against that house, but it did not fall because it was built on rock. But anyone who hears these words of mine and does not obey them is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain poured down, the rivers overflowed, the wind blew hard against that house, and it fell. And what a terrible fall that was! When Jesus finished saying these things, the crowd was amazed at the way he taught. He wasn't like the teachers of the law. Instead, he taught with authority.
How firm a foundation, you saints of the Lord, has been laid for your faith in his excellent word. What more can he say than to you he has said? Unto you who for refuge to Jesus have fled. And when through fiery trials your pathway shall lie, my grace all sufficient shall be your supply. I'll strengthen you, help you, and cause you to stand, upheld by my righteous, omnipotent hand. Soul that on Jesus has leaned for repose, I will not desert to its foes. That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shame, I will never, no, never, no, never say. How firm a foundation, you saints of the Lord, has been laid for your faith in his excellent word. A promise of God to his children. I am